Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loring. Coming up today, we'll hear Florida This Week from WEDU-TV, a program about state and local politics. And then later in this hour, we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. First, two listener comments about last Friday's program. Last Friday, we got into a discussion about the impeachment of President Trump, and we also discussed the governor's environmental record. Here's what two listeners had to say.
Hi, this is Suzanne House in Tampa. I'm calling about the Friday show. If Mitch McConnell said on national TV he would not be an impartial juror, how could he be sworn in yesterday? Can't he be charged with perjury? In a regular courtroom, he wouldn't even be chosen as a juror.
I'd just like to say that I don't understand how Governor DeSantis can say that he is for the environment when all he cares about is putting in freeways through our green corridors and causing the extinction of the panther, which is our state animal. I also agree that President Trump is a cult leader and very dangerous.
Well, there you have two comments that came in after last Friday's Radioactivity program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Hope you had a good Martin Luther King holiday. And coming up in the next part of the program, we're going to hear Florida This Week, which is a discussion about state and local politics, some of the issues that are current right now. So we'll hear that. And as we listen back to the program, please email us your thoughts about the topics we're discussing. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Here's Florida This Week. Coming up next, the legislative session begins with the governor outlining a big agenda. Environmentalists want the governor to do more to protect the environment. The former Orlando police chief will play a central role in the impeachment trial of President Trump. And the legislature is moving to stop Key West's efforts to protect coral reefs. Political Insights next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week, our panelists are Vic DeMaio is a political consultant and a Democrat. Craig Pittman is a reporter for the Tampa Bay Times. Natalie King is a political consultant with RSA Consulting and a Republican. And Janelle Irwin Taylor is a reporter for FloridaPolitics.com. Well, welcome, everybody. Legislature returned to Tallahassee this week for its annual two-month session. The governor opened the session with a State of the State message in which he outlined his hopes for what will happen during the 2 months. Governor DeSantis is calling for raising new teacher pay to a minimum of $47,500 a year. He wants E-Verify. He wants the eradication of Burmese pythons in the Everglades and a new law to force girls to get their parents' permission before getting an abortion. In his second year in office, the Republican said he wants lawmakers to pass legislation to help prevent the green algae blooms that have plagued the state. Meantime, Democrats, in their reply to the governor, called for an across-the-board raise for all public school employees, not just first-year teachers. They want an expansion of Medicaid, which the state has refused to do. They asked for full funding for the state's affordable housing program, which the governor also supports. The Democrats want to raise the minimum wage and pass legislation to protect LGBTQ Floridians from workplace discrimination. And they oppose the legislation that would require teenagers to have parental consent before obtaining an abortion. So, Janelle, welcome to the show. Tell me, what do you think the biggest hurdles are going to be? Which of those are going to be hardest to achieve?
Well, I think the teacher pay raises are going to be a monumental effort for the governor. On one hand, you have a $600 million price tag, and that's going to be very hard to get support from his own Republican Party. But on the other hand, you also have Democrats who really want to see that money, those raises apply to all teachers, not just new teachers. But a bigger issue, I think, came up even after his State of the State address, and that was efforts to really highly regulate state and make citizen initiatives much harder to get on the ballot. These are constitutional amendments like the $15 minimum wage, the medical marijuana was a citizen initiative. That effort, I think, is going to be very contentious.
The last few sessions, they have made it harder to get citizens initiatives on the ballots. They're going to try to take another step.
Yes.
Republicans are backing this, right?
Yes, Republicans in the House. I think what you might see is Democrats looking to the Senate to be the more moderate body and perhaps either scale back on that legislation or kill it altogether.
Natalie, what do you think is going to be easiest to pass, or what do you think is going to be hardest to pass in this session?
I don't know that there's an easy or hard in this process, but I do know that there are going to be things that each of the outgoing House and Senate leadership want to make sure occur before they leave, kind of setting their legacy in motion. I know that the governor has been very aggressive on some of the priorities that he would like to see the legislature pass. So I think that to the point about the teacher pay raises, although I do agree that all of our teachers deserve to make a professional wage and deserve an increase, I think that we will see a significant increase for our starting teachers. I think that the House and Senate will negotiate to a very healthy spot, but I think that that will be an exchange. There's a lot of horse trading that goes on, and I think that there will be, whereas the House wants some scope of practice, and I think that Oliva would like to see kind of the last piece of his health care revolution happen. I think that you have the Senate, who does have some very strong interest in environmental policy. I think that you will find that those horse trades will happen, and I think each person will walk away this legislative session very happy.
And when you talk about teacher pay, there's a lot of other groups that say they deserve a pay increase. State workers say, hey, we haven't had a raise in a couple of years. They want an increase. And then all the school employees, the bus drivers, the cafeteria workers, the principal room personnel, they all want raises too.
I agree with the fact that they probably need one. So the matter of balancing a budget and doing what they can do within what's available to them, I think that hearing Oliva this week, he wants something that is equitable, but he also wants something that's sustainable. And I think that they'll be looking at all of those options. I don't disagree that those other sectors of government employees need to be evaluated as well. But at the same time, we need to find the dollars, because none of the dollars that the government have are their money. It's the public's money, and they do have to figure out how they're best going to get the ROI they can for those dollars.
And Oliva, the House Speaker, he's more hawkish on the budget, isn't he, than perhaps even the governor?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So, Victor, what do you think the big issues are going to be this time around the legislature?
Well, you have a new governor. He's trying to do a populist agenda. I mean, if you look at all, I mean, every politician reads polls. And what's unique about Florida is we have, even Republicans are environmentally sensitive, because, we're surrounded by water. People enjoy the environment that we have, but we see little by little these green algae blooms that have blown up have really focused pretty heavily on what could really go bad in Florida if you don't do a
And the governor's already set up these task forces, and
Correct.
He's saying he wants more money for Everglades. So those
Correct.
Two items for the environment are on his agenda.
Well, there's so many needs we have. And, one thing the Republicans love to do, and they've done it nonstop in all the years they've been there, is they've cut taxes. They brag when Jeb Bush was governor all the way through the current governor, they bragged about, we cut $1 billion of taxes. Well, that sounds wonderful, but the problem is when you keep cutting the money coming in the door, there's less money going out. Now, the economy's doing well right now. I just read a Wall Street Journal story this last week where the tax cuts from Trump are sugar high, and they're going to be imploding here soon. And I've heard by the end of the year, we may have, this high that we're on right now may come tumbling down.
I want to ask you about the Sadowski Housing Trust Fund, because we've seen a slate of stories the last few years about how housing in Florida, especially for people that live in cities and places like Key West, is becoming more and more unaffordable. For the last number of years, a long time, they've been sweeping money out of trust funds. And one of those trust funds up there in Tallahassee is the Sadowski Trust Fund.
Exactly.
That's paid for by doc stamps on real estate transactions.
Exactly.
They've been using that money for general revenue instead of putting it in housing. This year, the governor says, I don't want to sweep that money out.
But you see, if you're trying to balance out all the sugar high tax cuts with the money that's out there, they see this trust fund. And, if you take, we had Tiger Bay today, and one of the panelists mentioned that in Hillsborough County alone, if we took 100% of the money we were supposed to get, we would have had $16 million. Instead, we only got two. So that money is supposed to go for affordable housing. And I worked for Governor Graham when we passed this thing many, many years ago. And if you take all the years that they've been cutting, we've actually cut about $2 billion that is supposed to go for affordable housing. And that's why paying school teachers $47,000, like even in West Tampa, the houses are $300,000, $400,000 there. I don't see how a school teacher making $35,000 a year can afford a $400,000 mortgage. So there's a dichotomy there. How do you get the monies to be able to pay teachers? And when you're not taking money in to be able to be, you know, fund the budget, and then how do you make affordable housing affordable for those who need it? You know, it's a catch-22.
Craig, it seems that there's other gaps between what the governor set out in his state of the state message and what the legislature is willing or able to do. One of the gaps is the governor wants e-verify. He wants to see everybody checked to make sure that they're a U.S. citizen before they're hired by companies. There is some move up there in Tallahassee to make sure that there are background checks at gun shows for all gun purchases. Even in the Republican majority, there are divisions within the Republican majority about where to go next.
True. And I suspect the gun show loophole is going to be a particularly hard fight. A Senate committee passed the bill, and Marion Hammer was already claiming this is gun control on steroids. I don't think her influence is quite as big as it used to be, but not since Parkland, but I think she's still got the ear of quite a few members of the legislature. I suspect that'll be a big fight. I just have to mention, by the way, in the State of the State speech, the governor, you know how he always calls out the names of people in the audience as a way to get into issues. And only in Florida would this happen. He actually singled out a couple of python hunters who were in the audience, a couple who I read up on their background. They actually went python hunting to celebrate Valentine's Day one year. Now, his stated goal is to eradicate all the pythons, which is something they have been unable to do for years and years and years. I suspect that's a good-sounding goal. Those
pythons are pretty wily.
Yeah.
But, you know, e-verify, the governor says he wants e-verify, but there's a whole group of people in Tallahassee, large businesses, don't want to see e-verify in place.
Yes, that is a big issue, but there's also, again, as you said, a disconnect within his own party, because the governor's proposal is for mostly government employees, more conservative-leaning, if it's fair to say that, lawmakers want a stricter version of e-verify that applies more
to
the private.
Right in line with President Trump, who wants to crack down on undocumented immigrants.
That's a hard pill for a business to swallow, because this is an unfunded mandate for them if it were to happen. That technology, going through that process, it's not free. So, of course, businesses are going to push back against anything that might affect their bottom line.
Okay, well,
you got to look at the session where a lot of dangerous things can happen. You got to look at who really holds the cards, who has the chips. And the most powerful interests up there are the insurance companies, associated industries. So things like gun control, you know, they those companies like Publix, they don't want people walking through Publix with shotguns and machine guns. Things like we talk about e-verify, that's just not going to happen, because the agriculture industry needs that cheap Mexican labor to be able to farm the orange groves and the tomato fields. So, you know, it sounds good. It makes a good soundbite, but the reality is it's just not going to pass.
Okay. Well, and speaking of Governor DeSantis, the governor says Florida will buy 20,000 acres of land in the environmentally sensitive Everglades to prevent oil drilling in the area in western Broward County.
The state will purchase the property from a company that had wanted to drill some exploratory wells. Environmental groups cheered the announcement, but on other environmental issues, the governor is getting low marks. The Florida Sierra Club this week came out with a new report card on the governor, giving him a D grade overall. The environmental group pointed out that Governor DeSantis did not mention climate change or the controversial proposal to build more toll roads across the state in his State of the State message. The governor received failing grades on protecting Florida's endangered springs and rivers for signing legislation last year that effectively eliminates local growth management laws, and for being silent on converting Florida to 100% renewable energy.
So, Natalie, despite that D grade from the Sierra Club, the governor has taken more steps than the previous governor did on the environment.
Agreed. I think he's actually walking the walk. I know that there's concern about not talking the talk, but you know, these 20,000 acres are actually part of a larger contiguous 60,000 total acres, and this is actually the largest wetland you know, acquisition in the last decade, and it's in the heart of the Everglades. I think that, at least from my perspective, I'm seeing that this is a top priority for the governor. And I think that we should embrace that and encourage him to continue doing this. You know, if expediting the Everglade restoration is going to be, you know, one of the things he's talking about and encouraging our legislature, who at the end of the day is the body that appropriates money and is the body that makes law, because his budget also came out and was requesting, you know, sustained funding of $625 million that is for Everglades. It's for springs. It's for clean water. So I think that, you know, he's acknowledged it's just the beginning. It's the first of many steps that need to be taken. And it's not just about drilling. I think it's great that these are now going to be preserved from drilling. There's a threat of drilling. But this is really about the ecosystem that is there. And it's about the reservoir and the other projects that are going to be able to be enabled through this purchase. It's through the new recreational opportunities for tourists and for residents. And it's for the wildlife habitat. We have over 60 endangered species in that space that I think there's a strong commitment to assure that they continue to be a part of our ecosystem.
So, Craig, you're one of the leading environmental reporters in the state. The governor has appointed a resiliency director
and
in the state.
And a chief science officer.
A chief science officer, which is way ahead of the last governor.
That's a low bar, though.
Okay, well, tell me, what's your take on this?
Well, you know, obviously, as Governor Scott's big push was for jobs, 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 sometimes at the expense of other things. And so, you know, under his administration, you weren't supposed to talk about climate change. Let's repeal any regulations that might slow down development or business growth. He got rid of the Department of Community Affairs. He vetoed money for all the regional planning councils every year he was in office. And it got to the point where when we had a big red tide outbreak, people actually showed up at his campaign events to heckle him and call him Red Tide Rick because they blamed him for it, for repealing regulations on septic tanks. Governor DeSantis very smartly picked up on that and made that an issue in his campaign and talked about, I'm going to do something about these toxic algae blooms because they're hurting our business, they're hurting our tourism. And as governor, he has started on the process of doing something about those things. He's appointed these study committees. He's steered funding towards the research. At the same time, though, he has taken some positions that, as the Sierra Club pointed out, are not helpful towards the environment, particularly approving those toll roads. That was an initiative from Senate President Bill Galvano that he took after meeting with the Florida Transportation Builders Association, the people who would be, of course, getting the contracts to build the roads. And his argument was, well, our rural areas need development, so we need to build these roads to develop them. And even the representative of rural areas on the committees are saying, we don't need these roads. We don't want to mess up our rural environment. Why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. So there's a certain amount of bafflement about what's the point of that as far as a public purpose. The thing about Governor DeSantis, though, is he's still an unknown quantity. You know, he will do the thing with the algae blooms and then the thing with the toll roads. And you're like, okay, which is the real Ron DeSantis? And I think this year will be the year we'll figure that out, I hope. Because it's interesting to see him. It's almost like he takes, you know, two steps forward and one step back as far as the environmental community is concerned. It's going to be interesting, too, to see if the climate change subject is something he's going to finally address directly. He's shied away from talking about that specific term or using that term, but he has done the thing with the resiliency officer where she's gone around the state and met with different local governments to talk to them, what are you doing about climate change? And she's on the verge of giving a report to tell people, okay, this is what we need to do. So the question is then what will he do?
Okay, more to come. Well, the impeachment trial of President Trump is set to start this coming Tuesday, and a Florida politician will play a big role.
The former Orlando Police Chief, Val Demings, who's now a Democratic member of Congress, is one of five selected by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to be an impeachment manager, essentially a prosecutor in the Senate trial. Demings is asking that Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell recuse himself from the Senate trial because McConnell has already said he will not be an impartial juror, violating the oath that he took on Thursday. Demings herself, though, made up her mind a year ago, saying at that time that the president should be removed from office.
Kansas.
So, Victor, not just Val Demings now, but late Friday, Pam Bondi is going to represent the president on the other side and defend him in these this impeachment trial. So we've got two major Florida politicians up there in Washington.
Central Florida. I'd put my money on Val Demings. She's a lot tougher. She really proved herself on during that committee hearings, being a very tough questioner. She's a former police chief from Orlando, so she's a very tough cookie.
What kind
and
of
it shows a lot of diversity on the Democratic side, bringing the group in.
What kind of courtroom experience does Pam Bondi have?
Pam worked for the Hillsborough County State Attorney's Office. She did some cases. She's an attorney. She's our local, you know, girl, if you want to call her that. But the fact of the matter is she's really, I think the problem is that she's so closely associated with Donald Trump that I think regardless of how she comes out, it doesn't, you know, I think it's jaded, to be honest with you. I just think Val's going to be, Val's going to be a much tougher advocate, but you know the way this entire impeachment hearing is going to take place, there's going to be a lot of paper shuffling. It's going to be a lot outside of the eyes. You're not going to see a lot of cross examination going on like you would during the committee hearing. So, and every day some new information comes out. So this is going to be a very interesting time. These next 2 weeks are going to be really critical to see how this thing even turns out. We know they don't have the votes for impeaching. The real interesting part is which Republicans are going to switch and go with the Democrats for asking for witnesses and so forth. That's going to be the real Susan Collins, for example. Those the ladies that are Bukowski, I think, from Alaska. Those ladies are going to be very interesting to watch in this whole process.
Natalie, what do you think? Who's going to have more impact? Do you think Pam Bondi or Val Demings is going to have more impact in the trial process?
I put my money on Pam Bondi all day long. I think that she is fierce, but that doesn't mean I'm going to discount what you know Congresswoman Demings is going to do. I think that she is going to be formidable, and I think that both have the interest of Florida in their hearts, and I think they're going to work hard to represent their constituents, their state, and themselves very, very strongly.
Okay. Well, the legislature is again trying to preempt a local law, this time a ban on certain kinds of sunscreen.
As the Miami New Times reports, this week, lawmakers on the Florida Senate Rules Committee voted 12-4 in favor of a bill that would block cities from regulating the use of particular kinds of sunscreens. The measure is a direct response to a Key West ordinance set to kick in next year that would require prescriptions in order to obtain certain sunscreens that are thought to damage coral reefs. The bill was authored by State Senator Rob Bradley. He cited Florida's problems with skin cancers as a reason for not regulating any sunscreens, and he claimed Key West law was based on junk science. But there are peer-reviewed studies of two chemical sunscreen ingredients, oxybenzone and octin oxate, compiled last year by the state's Office of Program Policy Analysis and Government Accountability. Those studies concluded that coral reefs can be damaged by the chemicals when exposed to concentration levels generally not observed in nature.
All right, Craig, let me ask you about the science.
Sure.
These two chemicals, what's your take on whether or not they, if you wear it on your body and you're swimming in Key West, that you're going to hurt the coral reef?
I think there are other things that hurt the coral reefs more. And more urgently, climate change being one of them, warming oceans. There's problems with coral reef diseases that are out there. But Key West at least is trying to take a step to do something about something they can control. And once again, you know, as you mentioned, the legislature stepping in. And sometimes I think we should call all of our representatives Bigfoot, because that's what they do. They, you know, some local government tries to pass regulations on gun control or plastic shopping bags or cigarette butts on the beach, and Tallahassee says no, you can't do that. We reserve those rights to ourselves. We don't want a patchwork of different regulations all over the place. So we're going to a perfect example here in Tampa, the tree ordinance, Tampa's right. Tree ordinance, and the legislature said nope, can't do that. You can't protect the trees. You have to let people cut them down. So that's what our legislature does.
Chanel, who knew the sunscreen lobby was so powerful in Tallahassee? Right?
I mean, I didn't even know that was a thing. You know, there is actually a bill to undo the tree legislation okay. In this legislative session. So there is that. But, you know, I think that this argument over sunscreen is going to be a really fascinating one to watch from a political onlooker perspective, which is kind of my bag. Because on one hand, you have what it's doing to coral reefs. And for environmental reasons, people are really going to want to pay attention to that. That tugs at the heartstrings. We want to protect our coral reefs. But on the other side, we're talking about skin cancer. And this is Florida. What Floridian hasn't had it just pounded into their head since infancy that if you go outside, you better put on sunscreen. So I think that it's going to really be a battle between what are we going to do, and it'll be interesting to see what sort of compromises arise in that debate.
Okay. Well, before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? And Craig, let's start with you. Your other big story.
Yeah, well, I have a new book coming out. It's on how the Florida panther became our state animal and then very nearly went extinct and was saved sort of at the last minute. And I'll have a book. My first book signing is at Haslam's in St. Petersburg at 2 p.m. on Sunday.
So all right.
Hope everybody comes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Janelle, your other big story.
I think the thing to watch, or one of the things that I'm watching really closely, is Senator Jeff Brandis's adult use cannabis bill. Now, this bill would legalize cannabis for adult consumption age 21 or older, whether or not it was medically necessary. Under the bill, the product would be sold at existing medical marijuana treatment centers. That's the name dubbed by the legislature. The two companies actually have funded a different citizen initiative to put it on the 2020 ballot with millions and millions of dollars. Sotera Wellness, which is now Parallel, and MedMen. They have decided to punt their ballot initiative to 2020.
So now
2022. Yep. So now 2020, the only thing that we have to look at is the legislative route. And Senator Jeff Brandis is sponsoring a bill very similar to that proposal. And then in a bipartisan show of support, Democrat Carlos Guillermo Smith is sponsoring a very similar bill in the Senate.
And the other marijuana initiative drive is flat too. Regulate Florida has given up too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Natalie, your other big story.
Last time I was on the show, I shared that the Hillsborough County School Board had just selected their 51 top candidates, and I'm happy to report that as of yesterday, they had their top three. And so I think that this week they will be whittling down to their final decision, and I think it's been a very interesting show to watch, and I think it'll be something to continue to see where the school board lands and how they are able to move forward as a district in serving their students.
There's a good chance Tuesday they'll make the big announcement after the interviews.
Correct.
All right, Victor, you're the big story.
Our friends in Puerto Rico are still suffering. They went through a horrible hurricane, Category 5, and now they're suffering from earthquakes. I've talked to friends on the island here just on coming on before the air, and they're even today they're getting rumblings of earthquake movement. But the saddest part is they've got billions of dollars that have been earmarked for Puerto Rico that Trump hasn't released for them to be able to use from the hurricane stuff. So they're dire straits. We need to try to contribute to Red Cross or wherever you can to help the people down there.
I got a press release from Senator Scott. He said the money's just been released towards the end of the week.
Let's keep our fingers crossed that they can get some help because they need them badly.
All right. Well, thank you all for a great show, and thank you for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org. Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night, and my guests on that panel were Victor Mayo, he was the Democrat, Craig Pittman, and Janelle Irwin Taylor were the journalists on that panel, and Natalie King was the Republican. And we talked about the many topics there, including the impeachment trial that begins today at 1 o'clock and the Florida connection to that impeachment trial. We talked about the possible ban on sunscreen. So some local governments would like to ban certain kinds of sunscreen here in Florida. As we heard, the legislature may ban local governments from banning certain kinds of sunscreen. We also talked about the opening of the session. And if you want to comment about any of those topics, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. You can also email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. Kevin writes this regarding one of those topics. He says, making it harder for Florida voters to use the ballot initiative is another example of the distrust and disdain that the state legislature feels towards the voters. The Sadowski Trust Fund fiasco shows how much Tallahassee values the will of the people, writes Kevin. And again, you can comment 813-239-9663. Well, it's going to get cold here in Central Florida again tonight, even colder than it was last night. Some temperatures here in the Tampa Bay area will dip below freezing. The cold weather shelters are open for
much of the Tampa Bay area, but tonight we'll see temperatures in the upper 20s and lower 30s tonight. So that is something that people need to take care of. And if you've got plants outside or if you've got friends that need shelter, that's an important issue. The impeachment trial of President Trump gets underway at 1 o'clock this afternoon. WMNF will carry the coverage of the impeachment trial live on our HD3 channel. There is a big debate about the rules, and it looks like there will be several hours of debate before a vote is taken on what rules to use for the impeachment trial. That vote could happen as soon as 5 this afternoon. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org if you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far. Tens of thousands of gun rights activists from around the country rallied peacefully at the Virginia Capitol yesterday to protest plans by the state's Democratic leadership to pass some gun control legislation. The size of yesterday's rally and the expected participation of white supremacists and militia groups raised fears that the state could see a repeat of the violence that exploded in 2017 in Charlottesville. But the rally concluded uneventfully around noon. One person was arrested for wearing a mask, which is illegal under some circumstances in Virginia. And lots of people were wearing masks. Only one person was arrested. Attendees spilled into the streets chanting USA and waving signs denouncing the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, who's a Democrat. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Here in Florida, consumers who bought a short-term health insurance plan thinking they had found a better deal than Obamacare during the open enrollment season might be in for a shock when they go to the doctor. The low-cost plans don't have basic coverage, such as prescription drugs or maternity coverage. The Trump administration rolled back restrictions on short-term plans in 2018. Critics quickly labeled them junk health insurance, warning that these short-term plans come with gaps and don't have to cover pre-existing medical conditions. There's a move in the legislature to do something about these short-term health insurance plans. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Jan Simpson is our phone producer today. Let's take a few phone calls right now. We're going to go to Ron in Lakeland. Hey, Ron, you're on MNF. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was listening to the end of your show. It's always a great discussion. Just a very brief point. Are we ever going to get to a point in our politics where women are not girls or cookies? Two of your panelists referred to Pam Bondi and Val Demings. One is somebody's a tough cookie, and Pam Bondi was some kind of girl. And no matter what their politics, it just seems to me a question of simple dignity. And these are polished professionals you have on that panel. So it was just a little off-putting in this day and age that people as powerful as Val Demings and Pam Bondi are still in some respects reduced to these trivial little names you'd give a child.
Well, Ron, I'm glad you pointed that out. I'm sure a lot of people agree with you, and I think it's important. Do you have a take on you know Pam Bondi's inclusion in the president's defense team, or do you have a take on Val Demings' inclusion as essentially a prosecutor?
Yeah, I guess I'm a little more fatalistic, but with the Senate in control of the Republicans, it doesn't matter if we put Hercules in Pam in Val Demings' position. It's a foregone conclusion. You don't have a impartial panel. People have admitted that. Even Val Demings has said a year ago or so he's guilty. So I don't see this going the Democrats' way. I see Trump staying in office. And it'll make for an interesting 2020 election.
And do you think voters will remember in November this trial that's about to begin?
They might not remember many details, but I think they'll remember the overall impact. People who are offended at the idea that the Senate won't be impartial are going to remember that. And people who are delighted that the Republicans kept Trump in office are going to be delighted about that. So the overall results, yeah, I think will be on people's minds in, what, 10 short months?
Yeah, it's coming right up, coming right up. Yeah. I'm just thinking that Thanksgiving is just about 10 months away. All right, Ron, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rob. Great our, job as always.
Thank you for saying that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and this is WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Nancy in St. Petersburg. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
It's a gorgeous day. Oh, yeah. I love this weather. It's great. Invigorating. I just wanted to say something that I think that the folks up there, the Republicans and everybody, have been very busy little bees for months now, you know, for since last year, maybe, as far as getting ready for this impeachment trial. I think they knew it was on the horizon. And so they're ready. And one of the things, if you've noticed in the news lately, is about the Supreme Court and how it is seeming to look at things such as prosecutorial overreach, what they term that as. In other words, they are not coming down on the side of defendants, or they are coming down on the side of defendants. You know, it's like all of a sudden they're a liberal court. Well, they're not. And if you look at the Christie trial, that's coming up, that they're deliberating, and they say they're not going to have something until June. Well, all of this goes to say that if you look at the Bridgegate thing, a lot of that has a lot to do with how the outcome of that with what this is going to have. Okay. You've got to look at that. You've got to read up on that. And you'll see that there's all this stuff about crimes and misdemeanors and was this a crime or was it just bad judgment? And I think this is how this impeachment trial is going to play out.
So you think that the current mood of the U.S. Supreme Court is going to help the president because he's the defendant in this case?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Because their whole thrust is that this isn't serious. That this was just business as usual. And so why is everybody upset about that? And another interesting thing is this. And I said this a long time. I called in and told you about it. Was the Foreign Relations Corruption Act and what Trump has said about that he wanted it repealed. And now this seems to be coming out in this book, this new book, this Stable Genius book by the Washington Post folks. And anyway, it's getting really intriguing as far as the players, because Roberts is the Chief Justice. And this is how the courts have been ruling lately on a lot of things. So I just wanted to bring that up and just make that comment.
All right. Nancy, thanks a lot. Thank you. Good to hear from you. She was talking about the Christie case, which was argued just a few days ago before the U.S. Supreme Court, and I'll read a little bit of how Politico reported it. Most of the justices on the U.S. Supreme Court expressed skepticism Tuesday about the federal government's case in the infamous Bridgegate scandal. Several of them peppering a Justice Department lawyer with questions as former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie watched from the front row. A number of the justices weighing some dense legal issues that surround the convictions of two former Christie allies seemed to find merit in the defendants' arguments that they did not defraud the government of its property by closing off two local access lanes to the George Washington Bridge. Justice Stephen Breyer said, "I don't see how this case works." Breyer is a member of the court's liberal wing. He said at one point during the hour-long hearing, Breyer said that what happened was bad and maybe even a crime, but doubted the statutes involved in the case were properly applied. So that's, I think that's what Nancy was talking about. Well, whether or not the Supreme Court justice who presides over the trial is one of those people that thinks that defendants ought to be given more rights. So, I don't know. I guess we'll find out. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. And DeMarco writes this about Pam Bondi joining the legal team defending the president. DeMarco says that Pam Bondi should not be included. President Trump also bribed Bondi when she was the Florida Attorney General. The president gave Bondi a campaign contribution, and she subsequently dropped the state's case against Trump University. Seems like a huge conflict of interest. Yeah, there was some suggestion at the time that the president had given money to Bondi's political campaign, and that Bondi's office, the Attorney General's office in Tallahassee, slow-walked any sort of Florida investigation into Trump University, even though that office in Tallahassee had received a number of complaints about people saying that they were ripped off by Trump University. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Let's go to Rick in St. Pete. Rick, you're on WMNF.
Yes, sir. Just a point of contention to the woman who called in a moment ago talking about the Supreme Court. Although the trial in the Senate is presided over by the Chief Justice, it's unlike any normal trial that you would ever have. For example, if a judge in a trial says a certain piece of evidence is not admissible, that's the last word. But in this case, if 51 senators say, hey, we want to do this or we want to do that, that's the way it goes. So really the Supreme Court justice, the Chief Justice, presides over it, but it's really just pro forma. There's no true legal status.
That's true. That's very true. If the senators decide to admit or not admit a piece of evidence, it's their decision, not the judge's. That's a good point.
Yeah, and it's the same. One of the earlier comments, it was on your voicemail that you opened the show with, you know, when someone was talking about, one of the senators shouldn't even be allowed as a juror. Well, none of them would be in a normal situation, because in any normal trial, you would say, do you know the defendant? Have you ever met the defendant? Well, every senator has. Have you ever heard anything about this case? Well, everyone has. So, they're, you know, it's not a, we're using the paradigm of thinking of it as a normal trial rules, federal rules of civil procedure. That's not the way it works.
Yeah, and Rick, do you practice as an attorney?
A long time ago in a galaxy far away.
Okay. All right. Well, you sound like a trained attorney. So, Rick, thanks a lot. Thanks for pointing that out.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Sounded like he had an interesting story to tell, didn't it? Didn't he? You know, if we wanted to take the show in that direction, I would have asked him more about what happened long ago and far away. Let's go to Daryl in Tampa. Hey, Daryl, you're on WMNF.
Hi, Rob. Good morning.
Good morning.
I will simply say this. Yeah, I've done jury duty before, and the last caller is absolutely right, but that's not what this is about. This is about, we've had established regulations and rules, and Mitch McConnell is really making this a joke. And that party, they act like they've been bought and paid for, and it's like we're either going to hang together or we'll hang separately. I mean, you listen at the statements of Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, in question what I just said. It makes no sense. Imagine, and I'm talking to your audience, imagine if you have been accused of murder and they would not allow you to bring any witnesses into the to speak on your defense of where you were and what time the murder took place, and you were doing something else, and you have, not facts, truth, where you were and what you were doing, but you are not allowed to bring this in here. This whole situation is a joke, and I sound pessimistic because I am pessimistic. I think you're looking at the beginnings of the devolution of America and the end of our democratic republic. And that's all I wanted to say, Mark.
Well, that's pretty sad, Daryl. Are you really that pessimistic?
But because I've learned, you see what you see. I take the world as it is, not as I would like it.
Okay. Well,
I don't want to see and don't see.
Yeah. All right, Daryl, thanks a lot. Thank you. The vote is likely to happen today about the procedural rules for the trial, for the impeachment trial. And one of the things that may come up is that it's the proposal by Mitch McConnell is that there not be an up-and-down vote on individual potential witnesses, that there'll be a vote, but it'll say either we'll have witnesses or we won't have witnesses. And, of course, the Republicans would like to bring in the son of Vice President Joe Biden to be a witness and somebody that testifies during the trial. The Democrats say he is not germane to the accusations in the articles of impeachment, so therefore he should not be there at the trial as a witness. So we've got the, but there are some people that might be interesting witnesses who do have firsthand information about the articles of impeachment and the allegations therein. One of those people might be Lev Parnas. Another might be the former security person John Bolton, who was a security advisor to President Trump. But it looks like we won't see a vote on whether or not these individuals will be voted on individually to be witnesses. It looks like the way things are heading is that there'll be an up or down vote on whether or not to have witnesses. And we'll see what the ultimate end is this afternoon around 5 or 6. And remember, WMNF is carrying the impeachment hearings live on our HD3 channel, The Source. It's easy to find. You can just find it on your computer by going to WMNF.org/listen. And you can find them pretty easily. Let's go to Louie in Brandon. Hi, Louie. You're on WMNF.
Hi, Rob. Great show. I had a thought about all of the folks who are wearing the MAGA logo. The United States has always been considered a great country, a great democracy, because of our adherence to and our dedication to the following of law. And it seems like this...
The following of what?
Law.
Oh, L-A-W. Law. I'm sorry. Okay, I thought you said awe. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. But it seems like this process that the Senate is going through is an abrogation of any notion of good law. The other thing, too, is people accuse it of being a political process, and it's supposed to be a political process. To say that it's a political process is not a bad criticism. It's our safeguard against the chaos of gerrymandered and rigged elections, which the country has experienced since its inception.
So how is it a safeguard against gerrymandered and rigged elections?
Well, only to the extent that that kind of gerrymandering will result in the kinds of politicians that we have in office now, vis-a-vis Donald Trump. They act badly as a consequence of their assumption of power.
So the impeachment, the removal of President Trump, is a fight against gerrymandering, is it?
In part, it is. Mm. Because gerrymandering is, in itself, it's an overreach of the political process.
But the... Yeah.
Go ahead.
But I was going to say, though, the way the Electoral College works is, I hope I'm right, is that it is not based on gerrymandering. It's based simply on the number of senators and members of Congress. I mean, unless you think that in the redistricting process and the census process, Republican states, Republican-leaning states have been given more House members than have Democratic states.
I think that's a part of the process.
Okay, all right.
And the House members that they are given are skewed in a.
Yeah, there's no doubt that there's gerrymandering within the state, but I'm wondering whether or not through the portion of congressional seats, and it's limited to 435. if they, you know, for instance, are they taking away states from Illinois and giving taking away House seats from Illinois rather, and giving them to states like Texas and Alabama?
I'm not suggesting that. What I'm suggesting is that the kinds of people that become the representatives of those states are skewed in a direction. In the last couple of elections, it's been two.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt in the House, I think that's true. In the Senate, it's a little different process because you can't gerrymander Senate seats because every state gets an equal number of seats. But I agree with you on the House, yeah. All right, Louis, thank you. Thank you for the call.
Okay.
All right, good to hear from you. I'm glad you called, and I'm sure other people agree with you. Let's go to Fran in Largo. Hey, Fran, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Oh, thank you, Rob. I think today I kind of share Daryl's pessimism about things. Sometimes I feel like we're like the end of the Roman Empire, the way things are going sometimes. And as far as Pam Bondi goes, the other man that said before, long ago in a galaxy far away, remember her and this was early in her career, what, as a prosecutor in Hillsborough? Was that
Yeah, she was. I think she was largely known as the spokesperson for the state attorney's office in Hillsborough County. And when my friend Vic DiMaio said on the show, on the TV show, that she had courtroom experience, I think in fairness, she had very little courtroom experience. She was more of the public face of the prosecutor's office. She's great on TV. She's a good communicator. But I don't think that she's got much oomph as a prosecutor. Now, she was the Attorney General of Florida, so that's a pretty big position, but that's not courtroom experience.
But anyways, I guess when she was Attorney General, I know it was something to do with Hillsborough County, but she went after these people after Hurricane Katrina. People can Google this or whatever they want to about the St. Bernard dog claiming that it was mistreated by these people. And she lost that case or whatever you want to call it in the court. And the people got their dog back. It just left a bad, bad feeling about her. In my mind, she is, to me, she's just a compromised person. She always goes where the money is. She's friends with people like Trump, and she's just compromised, and she fits right in with the Trump gang. And it just bothers me that we have people at the top of this bad caliber. Same way with that Alan Dershowitz. That's another representative.
Do you think it matters to the public that Dershowitz was one of the defenders of Jeffrey Epstein, that he was one of the legal, he's part of the legal team that was defending Epstein?
I hope so. Oh, I sure do hope that people are putting two and two together about some of these things. We can only hope, Rob. We can only hope. Today I'm pessimistic. Maybe something will happen that I'll become optimistic. I fluctuate all the time with this. It's just crazy stuff.
All right, Fran. Thanks a lot. Good to hear from you.
Okay.
Hang in there. You'll make it. We'll all make it. Back in 2010, Pam Bondi was in the middle of a custody battle over a St. Bernard that was rescued after Hurricane Katrina. And you can look that story up. It's all over. And it's interesting that Fran has a long memory on that. Fran, thanks a lot for bringing that up. Bob writes this. He says, there is a big difference between Democrat and Democratic. I think the fact that Trump is illiterate, he doesn't understand this, or he's just too lazy to add the IC, just proves his ignorance. I hope I'm reading this right, Bob. And what the Republican leader of the Senate is doing to our democracy is an insult to the fact that most of us are intelligent enough to recognize his hypocrisy. Now, those are the words of Bob. Bob, thank you for that. And you're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. And let's see, the next email to come in. Dave writes this. He says, you know as well as everybody that they have been trying to impeach President Trump since before he was in office. This entire thing was a sham, and Pelosi, Nadler, and Schiff should be indicted for treason, writes Dave, for the whole hoax and costing taxpayers millions. Biden and his son should be the ones on trial, and hopefully they will put them on the stand as witnesses. Then we will get to the bottom of the corruption. I have never been so embarrassed of Congress as this ridiculous Democrat-run House impeachment. If you watched it, I think you would agree. That's Dave's words out there in cyberspace. Well, if you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for your hero, Mark Biro. He's coming up in the next hour. Jan Simpson is our phone producer today. This is WMNF in Tampa. And remember, the HD3 channel this afternoon carries the impeachment trial live.